Blog Talk Radio.
This is from Kelly Manjaro, Tanzania. Homo, you can see heads and not all people here, man. It's gonna go everywhere in Africa. Why, see, I'm gonna tell you about Homo.
You wanna hear about what I wanna tell about? Nataka kusikia, nachotaka kuongea. Homo, upati, homo, homo, upati. Homo, upati, homo, homo, upati.
I want to restart.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. From time to time, we will have a special presentation on a variety of topics. Homeopathy is a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks. Please contact HWC if you would like to help support the show as a sustaining member or have suggestions for future shows. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Please share by tweeting on Twitter, posting on Facebook and MySpace, and all other social networks. You may select the widget and place the player on your blog or website. With gratitude to all our listeners, let's go!
Hello, everyone. This is an impromptu talk today, usually on Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We have Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim, but he is not available in the month of January, so we're going to see him back in a week. He'll be back next week, and I'm so excited to talk to him and learn to find out what has happened in this month. In the meantime, you know that I am a news hound, and I love to go all around the internet and search the health news, what is happening in the world, what's going on with the vaccination issues, and then we'll be speaking to Alan Phillips tomorrow at noon Eastern Time. And we're going to also have a new format to Thursday's show with possibly more guests speaking and having it a two-hour program. In the meantime, on Homeopathy World Community, the Wednesday show, I thought I would talk about specific remedies. The two in mind are muriatic acid and sulfur. And the reason for that is whenever somebody starts to talk about something, you have an interest, and if you have a curious mind, you're going to go out there and you are going to start to investigate and research. Look it up on the internet or on the books that are on your shelf. And that's what I did. First, I started to read all about sulfur, and then I started muriatic acid. I'm going to pull out Alan's keynotes. It's called Alan's Keynotes and Characteristics with Comparisons of Some of the Leading Remedies of the Materia Medica with Nosodes, published by Jane Publishers. And we just take a quick look at the preface, it says that this first edition of this book was only about half the size of the second, as it was prepared somewhat hastily for a special purpose. And sometimes this is a good thing, isn't it? That just get it done, just do it. Whether it is perfect or not, it is more important to take the action. But Dr. Alan took his time to write the second edition, and he gave the world a well-rounded out and complete standard book on homeopathic materia medica. We do not mean that the first edition was faulty as to its manner, but for it was used unchanged in the later edition. But it did not embrace a sufficient number of remedies. And if Dr. Alan were alive today, he would probably have to add a whole bunch of new remedies. In fact, I was reading the publication that just came out, a gorgeous publication from the North American Society of Homeopaths, NASH, N-A-S-H, and I was reading a proving on the opossum mammal, with a marsupial, and it's fascinating. You think about the opossum, and everybody has an image of the fact that it hangs by its tail or sleeps that position nocturnally, which is a total falsehood because it cannot carry that weight. However, I could not believe this. When the babies are first born after just a few days of gestation, I think it's might have said something like 18 days of gestation, there are 20 of these little babies could fit on a teaspoon. Is that really something? And then, of course, it goes into the pouch like the kangaroo does to continue the gestational period until they're ready to live on their own, and they end up, all of these little babies, being carried on the mother's back. So that must be quite a sight. And you find out one of the keynotes of the opossum is it's a nighttime nocturnal animal of extreme tiredness and disconnectedness. So that's quite interesting, and I recommend, if you're not a member of NASH and you are a homeopath in the North American area, including Canada, to join that. So in the preface of Allen's keynotes, he says, we do not mean that the first edition was faulty. No, when you do something, you do the best that you can. But so he didn't change it for the later editions, but he had to add more remedies. As Dr. Allen died before a third edition was needed, we concluded to bring it out unchanged. It's a masterpiece of materia medica work. Its symptomatology is made up of the unchanging landmarks of our remedies that are in constant use. It is, in short, a book that needs no revision. And that is from the publishers, Jane, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And so we know the beauty of homeopathy. The landmarks or keynotes or founding symptomatology are unchanging. That's because the materia, the material or the substance, the plant, mineral, or animal, those are fixed. Those are as they are in nature, and they elicit certain responses. And those responses to the outside world or to the way they are in nature, that is what it will cure in an individual who has a disorder. So that is the beginning preface of the Allen's keynotes. Now, again, on the Materia Medica, the first edition, there's an even further preface by Allen himself. He says, the life work of the student of the homeopathic materia is one of constant comparison and differentiation. He must compare the pathogenesis of a remedy with the recorded anamnesis of the patient. He must differentiate the apparently similar symptoms of two or more medicinal agents in order to select the similimum. So it's constantly a matter of comparison, learning that there are overlaps in symptoms, similarities in symptoms, and to know what will bring you to a conclusion that one is the correct matching remedy. To enable the student or practitioner to do this correctly and rapidly, he must have as a basis for comparison some knowledge of the individuality of the remedy, something that is peculiar, uncommon, or sufficiently characteristic in the confirmed pathogenesis of a polycrest remedy that may be used as a pivotal point of comparison. And we're going to be talking about that when we discuss muriatic acid, hydrochloric acid, and sulfur. It may be a so-called keynote, and you think about the steps or notes on the scale. There are eight notes, and each one is a key or a note. Because, of course, if you sing until you get from one point to the next, from one step on the scale, from one note to the next, there's an infinite number of sounds, of pitches in between. And a characteristic, the red strand of the rope, and it's the central modality or principle. As the aggravation, here's an example he's giving, the aggravation from motion for the remedy bryonia. So It can be mentioned that even the movement of the eyes is more than enough pain to recognize that this person is needing bryonia. And we've spoken before about the fact that a person needing bryonia will actually lay onto the painful side just to keep it still, just to keep it so it doesn't move. The amelioration from motion, which would be the opposite of bryonia, is rustoxacondrin. So they feel better. You know, when you look up in the material, in the rubrics, it's restlessness. So feeling better or amelioration from motion. The furious, vicious delirium of belladonna. And we know that for strep throat and high spiking a high fever suddenly. So belladonna is a good remedy for that in the Solanaceae family. Or the apathetic indifference of phosphoric acid. We know acid remedies have a tendency toward depression. And I want to welcome my guest today. I thank you so, so much for joining me. And please comment, or you may call in to 347-945-6956 if you're in the United States, or ring the Skype, the little blue Skype button if you want to talk to me. Thank you so much. Some familiar landmark around which the symptoms may be arranged in the mind for comparison. So your mind is constantly turning, constantly going. You're listening to the patients, what they're saying to the client, what they're saying. You're taking notes. You're seeing when the individual is becoming quite animated, or maybe the person has no energy within them. Their vital force is very low. And take note of that, that they are lethargic, or they're droopy in their face or their eyes. What do you see in your observation to know what landmark or keynote is going to bring you to the correct remedy? Something of this kind seems indispensable, says Alan, to enable us to intelligently and successfully use our voluminous symptomatology. Also, if we may judge from the small number of homeopathic physicians who rely on the single remedy in practice, so there are, he was saying, many of the practitioners, the physicians in his time, did use a single remedy, and they didn't use combinations, and they didn't mix up remedies. An almost constant demand for a revision of the Materia Medica. Its study in the past, as well as at the present, has not been altogether satisfactory to the majority. So he's providing a service for all of those physicians who like to use keynotes, landmarks, single remedies, and he says that there wasn't, in his time, enough information out there for the students. And so I'm going to go ahead. He says, an attempt to render the students' task less difficult, to simplify its study, to make it both interesting and useful, to place its mastery within the reach of every intelligent man or woman in the profession, is the apology for the addition of another monograph to our present work of reference. And I would say that Alan's keynotes, not only is it accessible to homeopaths and physicians and nurses and those in the healthcare fields, I think it's accessible to the man in the street, the woman who is caring for the family, or any kind of caretaker. To learn these remedies is to have at your disposal an incredible wealth of knowledge, indispensable for helping someone through a difficult time. We're going to move on to the muriatic acid, and that's because someone on Facebook this week wanted to learn a little bit more about it. I don't know, recollect where they posted it, but of course, when you say something of interest, go ahead and investigate for yourself. Do some research. We find that muriatic acid is actually HCl, hydrochloric acid, and we know that NaCl is common table salt, sodium chloride. So here we have what he says are keynotes or landmark symptomatology. This is adapted to the persons with black hair, dark eyes, and a dark complexion. Isn't that unusual? That means that by appearance, already you have some information to go on. Similarly to the nux vomica remedy, this person might appear irritable, peevish, disposed to anger and chagrin, and restlessness with vertigo. So we can see how similar that is to nux vomica. But of course, the purpose of this book is to do the differentiations. He says the diseases of asthenic type with moaning, unconsciousness, and fretfulness. And I'm sure there are many other remedies that also have this moaning and groaning through the pain. Ulceration with fungus-like growths and pseudo-like membranous deposits of intestinal tract. So we see here digestion is going to be affected. We also see ulceration is going to be something big, and growths like fungus. Great debility. As soon as he sits down, his eyes close. The lower jaw hangs down, and the person will slide down in the bed. And these are black letters. And when they're in bold and black letters, you know that that has been clinically reported numerous times, and it is something that you're definitely going to see. And you can just picture in your mind, if you close your eyes, picture in your mind what this individual is going to look like if they are so debilitated that they can't even hold up their jaw and is just hanging down. And then they slide down in the bed. Then we also have the mouth and anus are chiefly affected. The tongue and sphincter, anus, are paralyzed. So again, paralysis is indicating that they have a great debility and they're not able to really function completely. Malignant affections of the mouth, studded with ulcers, deep and perforating, having a black or dark base, offensive foul breath, intense prostration. And so you can see, you think about hydrochloric acid, how it burns a hole through anything that it is going to touch, and therefore it is ulcerating, and it turns things black, and there is decay and a foul, offensive odor from the mouth. With this prostration, you can imagine why muriatic acid does this. And then he lists a number of diseases where muriatic acid or hydrochloric acid could be applicable. He says in diphtheria, in scarlatina, and also in cancer. And we know cancerous growths can have this total decay with ulceration. The person cannot bear the thought or sight of meat. Isn't that fascinating? And he gives us many comparisons, and in this particular symptomatology, we have nitric acid, which is another acid of nitrate. So just, I'm going to repeat that one, because you might hear it, like a person who says, you know, they're a vegetarian, but they really cannot stand the sight of meat. It really repulses them. In that case, you're going to think cannot bear the thought or sight of meat would be muriatic acid or nitric acid. Then we have, going to another part of the body, if the anus is very sensitive, either with or without hemorrhoids, and the anus is sore during the menses, he says, or menstruation. Now, isn't that also something we could compare to nitric acid, who also, we say, the mucous membranes, the mouth, and the anus also are extremely sensitive. So we see a real close comparison to those. Then we talk about hemorrhoids, which are swollen, blue, sensitive, and painful to the touch. Again, in black letters. They appear suddenly in children, too sore to bear the least touch. This is repeated quite a bit, that they don't want to touch it. Even the sheet of the bed is so uncomfortable that they wouldn't want that to touch it. Then what happens is, remember we spoke earlier about this prostration and this debility and this fact that the lower jaw hangs down? Well, here we have prolapse. This is the other end of the body, the prolapse while urinating. And when we talk about discharges, we can see diarrhea. The stool is involuntary while urinating, or on passing wind or flatus. And here we have a comparison to our beautiful plant, the aloe plant, which is so soothing to the intestinal tract and to the skin and to the dermis, that when there is a sore, we love to put on some aloe juice. So just scraping open a leaf and putting it on. But when you're thinking now about aloe, you might also have a new thought in your mind toward muriatic acid, because it has a similar symptom here with the involuntary stool, which happens to be diarrhea, while the person is urinating. They cannot urinate without having the bowel movement at the same time. Also, the urine passes slowly. The bladder is weak, and the person must wait a long time for the urine to pass. They even have to press, you know, when you put that pressure onto the muscular system down there so that the anus protrudes. So the person cannot even hold their bowel movement, and yet in order to urinate, they must press in order for them to get the urine out. So isn't that interesting? Think about that, what's going on with the musculature. And it's, you know, you think about this theme of great debility, prostration, paralysis in the muscles. The person cannot bear the least touch is repeated even again, not even the sheet on the genitals. And this is compared to the remedy Murex, an ocean animal, also has a similar sensation, that the genitals are just so sensitive that they cannot be touched, not even by the sheet of the bed. And then he goes on to tell us a little bit more about what happens in a disease. He mentioned diphtheria, scarlatina, and cancer. And now Alan is mentioning typhoid or typhus, where there is a deep, stupid sleep, unconscious while awake. Can you imagine that this person, you see them, their eyes are open, and yet they are unconscious, loud muttering or moaning. The tongue is coated at the edges, which is shrunken, dry, and leather-like and paralyzed. Involuntary fetid stools while passing the urine, again repeated, so it must be a keynote, it must be a landmark symptom, and sliding down in the bed, which we think of, there are other remedies that have that also. Then if you're taking the person's pulse, it says it intermits every third beat. The palpitation of the heart is felt in the face. Quite strange, rare, and peculiar, that if the beating of the heart is not just felt in the chest itself, but is felt in the face. This might be something that a person might say when we think of sensations, as if the heart is beating and felt in the face. One more little piece of information is freckles, eczema solaris. So the person, he gives the initial appearance of being this remedy adapted to black hair, dark eyes, and dark complexion, and we can add freckles. Then, at the bottom or the end of the summary for each remedy, he gives relations. And this includes Muriatic acid follows well after you have given Bryonia, Mercurius, or Roustox. Remember, he did give a comparison earlier to those remedies, I believe, or maybe he didn't. We're going to be doing that in the sulfur case, but in Bryonia, we know the person is worse for movement. In Mercurius, we have a lot of ulceration and abscesses, and in Roustox, we have a lot of restlessness. So here we have cures the muscular weakness following excessive use of opium and tobacco. So we can think now for a person who has perhaps some sort of a cancer after smoking too much or some sort of a weakness or paralysis to think of muriatic acid. And remember, these acids do have depression typically with them. I hope that has been helpful. I'm going to there's no one talking in the chat. I see that there are a few people who are listening. If you have any comments, if you have a story to tell, just give me a call at 347-945-6956 as a guest to call in, or go ahead and click that Skype button. I would love to hear your comments and your thoughts about this. We're going to move on to the remedy sulfur. And I have used a fortune from a fortune cookie as my placeholder in the book. My bookmark is a fortune cookie note, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you what that says. It says, a man without aim is like a clock without hands, as useless if it turns as if it stands. I'll repeat that one more time. A man without aim is like a clock without hands, as useless if it turns as if it stands. That was pretty good, huh? So we have to really do something about finding our direction in life in order to point us to our future or present time. Now we're going to go ahead with sulfur. Sulfur is called brimstone and flowers of sulfur. It is an element, and not only does Alan have it, I'm also going to throw in some goodies from Robin Murphy from his book of the Materia Medica, which is completely thorough and an excellent resource for anybody who studies homeopathy. The summary here is many pages long. It's sublimated sulfur, brimstone, the trituration or grinding of flowers of sulfur, a saturated solution of sulfur in absolute alcohol constitutes the tincture. A trituration of amorphous sulfur has also been used. The effects of the milk of sulfur or precipitated sulfur prepared by precipitation from a solution of calcareous sulf with hydrochloric acid. Wow! Did you know that? Because we just finished studying muriatic acid. And if you don't mind, just hum for a second. I want to go over and close the door so I have a little bit more quiet in here. Just sing a song to yourself for 1 second. Okay, I'm back. And now we are on to sulfur. It is an elementary substance. And you know sulfur is like the polycrust. It covers so many symptoms that you're going to end up finding it in almost everyone. It is in our flowers out there and creates the beautiful colors. It also produces quite an odor, as everybody knows when they boil an egg or they smell this sulfur odor. occurring in nature as a brittle crystalline solid and burning in the air with a blue flame, being oxidized to sulfur dioxide, the sulfurous acid. Sulfur is a product of volcanic eruptions, found free in nature, and was used from ancient times to remove skin disorders. The reputation of sulfur as a remedy is perhaps as old as medicine. As early as 2,000 years ago, says Hahnemann, sulfur had been used as the most powerful specific against scabies. So scabies, we're talking about this itch with which the workers in wool are so much affected and causes an intolerably agreeable tingling, itching, gnawing, as of vermin or little critters in the skin. Some designate it as an intolerably voluptuous, titillating itching, ceasing as soon as the parts are scratched and commencing to burn, which burning continues after the scratching. Sulfur frequently produces in healthy persons burning, itching pimples and vesicles resembling the itch vesicles, and especially itching in the joints and in the night. So we have time of day. The worst itching is at night. The specific power of sulfur to cure itch was abused. It was applied historically externally as baths and ointments, and the skin affection was not cured but repelled. And a host of secondary disorders appeared in its place. And so what he is talking about here is the fact that it was not used in potency, but people were going into a sulfur bath to try to ease the skin itching and whatever kind of eruption they were having. The domestic use of sulfur as a spring medicine is based on its anti-soric properties. It is one of the most popular diaphoretics of the day, says Milne. Few old women failing to use it when any eruption is supposed to be struggling through the skin. And now I'm going to switch over back to Allen's keynotes. He says that it is adapted to persons of scrofulous diathesis, subject to venous congestion. So the veins are congested. So you're going to see that in their skin, especially of the portal system. Persons of nervous temperament, quick-motioned, quick-tempered, plethoric, and the skin is excessively sensitive to atmospheric changes. And here he compares this temperament and this sensitivity to the atmosphere, to the weather changes, to the climate changes, to three other remedies. He calls out Hepersulf, which is a combination. It's got sulfur in it. Calicarbonicum, and also sarinum. And we would learn that sulfur is a very hot-natured, whereas sarinum is almost very, very similar to sulfur, except they are typically cold-natured and like to bundle up, whereas sulfur likes to throw off the clothing. Now, what about the appearance? We learned about the appearance of muriatic acid, a little bit, and now we're going to look at the appearance of sulfur-natured person. They are lean, they are stoop-shouldered, and they walk with their shoulders stooped. They sit with their shoulders stooped. They're walking, and they appear to walk like an old man, even if they're younger, I imagine. Their standing is the worst possible position for the sulfur patient. They simply cannot stand. Every standing position is uncomfortable. So might you imagine that they might be trying to lean on something, or they would be repositioning themselves because it's so uncomfortable to stand, they would rather be sitting. Something else about their appearance, and it doesn't sound too good. He says they are dirty, filthy people, and they are prone to skin affections. Here again, we're going to look at the similarity to sarinum. That's sarinum, I-N-U-N. They have an aversion, actually, to being washed. Can you imagine? Now they are looking filthy, They are having skin problems, and yet they don't want to wash it off. They're always worse after a bath, and they are too lazy to rouse and too unhappy to live. This sounds like a very depressed type of person, too, or maybe just unsatisfied. They're not happy and they're lazy, but you know, this is only one aspect of sulfur. The sulfur person can be quite jovial as well and quite robust. So I guess what he's depicting here for us is when the sulfur person is not in their best form. They're not having a great amount of energy, and they haven't been taken care of too well, either by their parent has not taken care of them too well, or they have not taken care of themselves too well. The children cannot bear to be washed or bathed, and he has a little note here for us. In cold water, if they don't like to be bathed in cold water, you can think about antimonium crudum as a comparison remedy. He says that the children might appear emaciated or have a big belly, which I typically think of sulfur for that, but also for silica for that, but he says sulfur also might have a big belly. They are restless, they are hot-natured, and they kick off the clothes at night. He gives us a comparison for the kicking off of the clothes. He says hepersulf and also sinicula. It's a type of water that has a lot of minerals in it. Then we have the person would have worms. And he said, finally, and this is really important, because sulfur is used as an intercurrent remedy or something when the homeopath feels that they have selected the right remedy based on all indications that the person needs whatever remedy it is, and yet the patient is simply not responding to it properly. In that case, he says, whenever the best selected remedy fails, then a dose of sulfur will usually set it right. When carefully selected remedies fail to produce a favorable effect, especially in acute diseases, it frequently serves to rouse the reactive powers of the system and clears up the case. This is, he indicates that when it's a chronic case, you might think about the nosode serinum to clear up the case. And then we look at scrofulous, psoric, chronic diseases that result from suppressed emotions. Just imagine that. So many of our illnesses are because we don't allow our emotions to be expressed. We think about status agria as one of those that a person will push down all the anger that they have, their rage from being abused or hurt. And here he provides two different remedies as a comparison. He again repeats serinum for chronic diseases resulting from suppressed emotions, and also causticum. And we know that a caustic lye, L-Y-E, that agent that gives us the gloss on our pretzels, the lye, or even it's used in bread making too, and also as a cleaning agent, causticum can be quite raw. So now we have complaints that are continually relapsing. Not only is it for a remedy that's chosen that doesn't work well, so give a dose of sulfur, we also have complaints that are continually relapsing. In such cases, he suggests as menstruation or leucorrhea for females. Patients seem to get almost well when the disease comes back again and again. What could we think about? We can think about the polycrest sulfur. And probably it would only be given one dose. He does not give indications of dosages in the book, Allen's Keynotes. Yet, if you give it time, it will turn things around. Congestion to single parts. And remember at the beginning, we talked about venous congestion in the veins. So he says congestion to single parts of the body, such as the eyes, the nose, the chest, the abdomen, ovaries, arms, legs, or any organ of the body, marking the onset of tumors or malignant growths, especially at the climactera. So thinking about the use of sulfur before pathology sets in, when we see the initial signs and symptoms of these types of people, we can halt the progression of any kind of a pathological disease that might set on later in life. And I want to thank those people who are sticking with me and learning today. Welcome you to comment or call in. One of the major keynotes of sulfur is the sensation of burning. And he gives us locations for that. He says on the vertex, the top of the head, and also smarting in the eyes. So you can see that a person might be rubbing or blinking their eyes or squinching them together because they are smarting with this burning sensation. Also in the face. In the face, actually burning, he says, without redness. That's quite interesting, isn't it? And vesicles in the mouth. So if a person is having perhaps like canker sores or blisters in the mouth, sulfur might be one of the remedies. He also mentions dryness of the throat, first on the right side and then on the left side. So here we note that he's giving us an indication of direction. There's also burning in the stomach and burning in the rectum, in the anus, and itching piles, hemorrhoids, and scalding urine, like fire in ripples. Wow. So this brimstone and fire is this burning, like from a volcano, from the sulfur of the volcano. We see how important this keynote is. He even compares it, very interestingly, to arsenicum album. Arsenicum album also has burning sensation, and they like sips of cold water, small sips, and I think that sulfur would probably like larger gulps of water to quench their thirst, their dryness of the throat. He says that the burning can occur in the chest, and it rises up to the face of skin, of the whole body, with hot flushes. So perhaps when you think hot flushes, that a woman during the menopause time in their life, it might come in handy. And in spots between, and when he says in spots, it means in particular places, like you can point to this spot, in this spot there's a burning sensation. He says between the scapula, and that we know is similar to what phosphorus has, that particular symptom. Burning between the scapula in the back. Now think about this. They have sick headaches every week or every 2 weeks with prostration and weakening. Here he compares it to sanguinaria, this is a plant remedy that also is well known for headaches, for migraines, and he says so it is the periodicity every week or every 2 weeks. Again, he mentions the hot vertex, but there are cold feet sensation. Everybody knows about sulfur having hot feet, but here he's mentioning with the sick headache and the heat at the top of the head, we have cold feet. Try and remember that. Then there is constant heat on the vertex and cold feet in the daytime with burning soles at night. So it is the time, the peculiar, strange, rare, and peculiar of the time making the difference in whether the feet are feeling hot or cold. At night, they are hot. During the day, they are cold. He wants to find a cool place for them. Have you ever had that sensation where your feet were really, really burning hot, maybe in the bed, and you tried to find a cool place on the bed to put them against so it would cool them off? He compares that to sanguinaria and sanicula again, and he puts them out of bed to cool them off. Okay, that is a comparison to Metarhinum, and that's another nosode. So Metarhinum also likes to put the feet out of the bed covers in order to cool them off. What about cramps in the calves and the soles at night? So I am learning that a dose of eating foods that have high magnesium will help you with your calf muscles cramping or your soles cramping at night. But here it's indicated if you want to use the homeopathic remedy, if all the other pictures that we've been talking about fit. We also have hot flushes during the day with weak, faint spells passing off with a little moisture. Does anybody out there think about fainting? Fainting with flushes, that would be sulfur. And we also think about ammonium acid, smelling salts for fainting, don't we? Now, often you'll see little children running around who have these bright red lips. And he says so poetically, as if blood would burst through. So they are ruby red, are they not? And that is also an indication of sulfur. And he compares it to another nosode called tuberculinum. So sulfur has such widespread symptoms, so common, that we have comparisons to Serinum, Metarhinum, and tuberculinum. I might have misquoted and said tuberculosis maybe, but it's tuberculinum is the nosode. They have a sense of weakness and emptiness, goneness, or faint feeling in the stomach at a particular time of day, and that is at 11 a.m. Why? Because they usually skip their breakfast. They skip breakfast, and now by 11 a.m., 10 or 11, they're going to run to the kitchen, they're going to find something to eat, and that's going to make them feel better. That's very similar to Natrum Carbonicum, also has a similar thing, that at 10 or 11, they are hungry, they cannot wait to eat lunch. You know, if you have a student, a kid in school, and we used to have very strict rules, we could not bring food in to our classes. We couldn't snack or munch, but just imagine that kid, and we used to have rotating lunch periods. So you might have lunch at 10, 11, 12, or maybe even 1 o'clock if you're in a huge school with thousands of students and the cafeteria has a certain number of kids it can hold. Your child might be waiting a long time to eat lunch, and if your child needs the remedy sulfur, they're going to really be feeling faint, weak, and empty, and really uncomfortable, maybe even that burning sensation in the stomach by the time 11 o'clock rolls around. And so I think that's probably different today. Probably kids can maybe put something in a pack and have a snack. I don't really know how the schools are today where you are. So there's frequent weak faint spells during the day. He gives us another remedy, in another element. Remember, sulfur is an element, and that is zinc. And we really find zinc in the meats that we eat and also some of the nuts. And so here we have faint spells during the day. Back to discharges, we talk about diarrhea. And for this person, the sulfur person, they have diarrhea after midnight, but it has no pain at all. It's painless. It gets them out of bed. You're going to see them jump out of bed and in the early in the morning. And I usually think about 5 a.m. in the morning is when they get up. Here he compares the remedy to aloe, which was mentioned for muriatic acid, and Serinum once again, as if the bowels were too weak to retain their contents. In addition to the diarrhea, the sulfur patient could easily have constipation with stools that are hard, knotty, and dry, as if burnt. He compares this type of a stool to bryonia, thinking of that hard, knotty, dry, and as if burnt stool to bryonia and sulfur. They are large and painful, and in fact, the child is afraid to go to the bathroom, afraid because they're going to have pain when this hard, dry bowel movement is going to be expelled. The pain compels the child to desist on the first effort. They're going to sit there, so maybe that's that kid that's sitting on the pot for a long time because they're not willing to let anything come out. But in addition, this constipation, this type of discharge alternates with diarrhea. So we have a whole venue of remedies in this sphere. We have looking at aloe, sirinum, bryonia, and sulfur. The discharge both of the urine and the feces is painful to the parts over which it passes. It passes large quantities of colorless urine. Now, that's surprising, is it not? Because we think of sulfur having a lot of redness, having red sediment, having yellow, causing yellow color. But here, in this case, large quantities of colorless urine. The parts around the anus are red and excoriated. They're raw. They're sore. They're burning. All of the orifices of the body are very, very red. Remember the lips being ruby red. All discharges are acrid, excoriating wherever they touch. So this type of a patient is not going to like to have to pass any of these discharges due to the soreness and the burning. In terms of menses, for a female, they occur too early, too profuse, and too protracted or too long. Menorrhagia has not been well since her last miscarriage. And so Dr. Lippi, another master homeopath, gives us a special time to give the sulfur dulse. You know, we're going to be talking about astrology and homeopathy with Senya coming up in a couple of weeks on the Health In Show. But Dr. Lippi says a single dose given at the new moon. So when the first new moon appears, and the woman has not been well since a miscarriage, one dose of sulfur may turn her right. Now we have boils. Remember, this is a skin remedy. Boils that are coming in crops in various parts of the body, or a single boil is succeeded by another as soon as the first one is healed. So you think that, okay, I just had a boil. It came out. It erupted. It's gone. Like the volcano, it's healed, but you think, okay, I'm over and done with this. No, now another one is going to crop out. He compares this to the remedy tuberculinum, the nosode. Has anybody ever thought about that? Quite interesting. Now we have skin, itching, voluptuous, scratching. It feels good to scratch. Wow. I'm sure everybody knows how that feels, especially if they've had a mosquito bite. The skin is just begging to be scratched, and it feels good once you do it. However, following the scratching, there is a burning sensation. For them, for the sulfur patient, this is worse from heat of bed. Their skin is worse from the heat of the bed. Therefore, they're going to have their most complaints at night when they crawl under the covers. He compares this with mercurius. Mercurius, a remedy, another remedy for ulceration and heat. And the mercurius, mercurial personality or sensations, they also are worse from the heat of the bed. The other little note that you might want to try to remember is that in the skin, we have particular areas that are the folds of the skin, where our bends are in our joints. He seems to call those the folds have soreness. So those are going to be the worst part. And he gives us sulfur, and he also talks about lycopodium for that. Another comparison. The skin affections that have been treated by medicated soaps and washes. How many people out there use medicated soaps. Almost everything has chemicals in it today. And therefore, if you've been treating yourself by using medicated soaps, you're suppressing the eruption and the discharge and the what he says is filthy people prone to skin infections. You've tried to ease the burning itchingness with some kind of soap or medication or wash, and it's not going to actually go deep enough into the vital force to heal that person. They also say for folks who have been treating their hemorrhoids, you know, we have a remedy called, or a medication called Preparation H. And people use that. It certainly might make it feel better for a short while, but it's not going to heal the totality, the whole person. To facilitate the absorption of serous or inflammatory exudates, and he gives us location in the body, the brain, the pleura, the lungs, and the joints. When Bryonia and Calimur, or the best selected remedy, fails. And so he repeats for us, when the best selected remedy fails, one dose of sulfur might set it right so that the correct remedy might work properly. So we have inflammation here, and we know inflammation is involved in all disease. It's the sensitivity of the immune system to try and heal itself with this inflammation as a form of protection and a barrier against whatever the invader is. Now we have chronic alcoholism, dropsy, which is edema, and other ailments of drunkards. Alan says, they reform. So those folks who go off the wagon or on the wagon, they do the 12-step program. I highly recommend that. It's going to be really helpful for getting to a place where you're not drinking, overly drinking, because you're not allowed to drink, and you also have community to support you. So it says that the chronic alcoholic reform, they do their best, but they continually relapse. In such a case, we might think about sulfur. He also gives us two other nosodes, serinum and tuberculinum. Those are the three that you think of together, sulfur, serinum, and tuberculinum, and that's for chronic alcoholism. What about nightly suffocative attacks? He wants the doors and the windows wide open and becomes suddenly wide awake at night, drowsy in the afternoon after sunset, and wakefulness the entire night. So this is a person, and I have just been hearing a fantastic bit of news about the circadian rhythm of the body, about people who are trying to lose weight. They said that just doing one thing, just changing one little thing, is going to help you to lose weight. I mean, you can lose 5 pounds in no time at all if you get up in the morning and you eat a hearty breakfast. You eat a good solid breakfast in the morning, and then a midday lunch, and then the lightest meal of the day is dinner. And that will reset your inner clock. And what do we know about sulfur? Sulfur likes to skip breakfast. They don't eat, and then by the time 11 o'clock rolls around, that's when they're starving. They're hungry, and they have to eat. So here we have what happens at the nighttime is they're up all night. They're awake, wide awake, and that's why they probably like to sleep in, or perhaps they're eating at night, and then they don't feel good or don't feel hungry in the morning. So here we have suffocative attacks. He wants the doors and the windows wide open, and they become suddenly wide awake at night. And create that image in your mind, that picture of that person jumping up out of bed, opening the windows because they can't breathe, and now they're wide awake. So if you set that in your mind, you will remember this remedy. And then you'll remember that by the afternoon, after sunset. I wouldn't call that drowsy in the afternoon after sunset. I would call that evening time. They have now run out of their energy and they are drowsy. These folks have happy dreams. Remember earlier we said that they are unhappy people, but they have too unhappy to live, he said. But here it says that they have happy dreams, so happy that they wake up singing. So you can see these folks in the morning. They've jumped out of bed because they had to run to the bathroom to have their bowel movement. And they're not really hungry. They're feeling great. They're happy. And they're singing. And then the afternoon, they're losing their energy. And they get tired. But then at night, they're wide awake again. Everything looks pretty for the sulfur patient. He takes a fancy to everything. Even rags seem beautiful. And that is a keynote that most people recognize, that these sulfur folks, they love to collect old raggedy things. They have their house filled from head to toe. I guess that you could call them hoarders. They've got old newspapers, old containers. They don't like to throw anything away. They find beauty in rust. They find beauty in things, old artifacts and stuff. And they are collectors, and they can collect enough to make a museum. So that is the keynotes. And one last tidbit is that similarly to Thuja, that's Thuja, and to crocus, a beautiful little lily plant, a bulb that grows out of the earth, and the Thuja plant, they have the sensation or feeling as if there is a movement in their abdomen as if a child. So a woman who has given birth knows what it feels like to have a baby inside that's kicking or moving or turning. The movement in the abdomen is a sensation. I suppose a man could experience this as well. It would be quite unusual to express this, to say, you know, it feels as if there's something alive in my belly. And that's probably what the person would say. Now, finally, we come to relations, complementary relations. We've spoken about so many of them. Here he gives the remedy aloe and the remedy sirinum. Those two are his top complementary remedies. And then he says ailments from the abuse of metals generally. And I'm not sure what metals that would be, but you know that in our vaccines, we do have metals. We have mercury, we have aluminum, and we have, I'm sure there's a bunch of other metals in there. We have metals in our water that come through the pipes that get copper and other kinds of metals get picked up by the water molecules, and they go into our drinking water. And what about folks who have metals from overeating of certain plants? I'm learning that plants also have all of these minerals, and let's say there's radioactive fallout, and those go into our plants, and we eat these plants, and they could accumulate. So just about anybody might use a dose of sulfur. I suppose people working in the industrial age would be in touch with quite a bit of metals. Or any, think about the metals that are in our mouth. If you've had amalgam fillings and the mercury and other metal vapors, there are people who are so sensitive to metals that they can't even wear a ring if it touches their skin. They will have a burning and a discoloration on their skin. What about compatible remedies? What are compatible remedies to sulfur? We have the triad of sulfur, calcarea, and lycopodium. So we have calcarea carbonicum and lycopodium. And what is so close to lycopodium? Pulsatilla, the weepy, moody, fair, needy person is a pulsatilla person. We have sor spirilla and sepia, sulfur, calcarea. Okay, so he's giving us the triad here, sulfur, calcarea, and lycopodium, or sulfur, sarsaparilla, and sepia. Frequently follow in the given order. So you don't want to mix up the order of giving these remedies if they're a triad. One follows the other, and he specifically says calcarea carbonica must not be used before sulfur. So therefore, you're going to need to give sulfur first, calcarea second, and lycopodium third. Sulfur is the chronic of aconite, and it follows it well in pneumonia and other acute diseases. Now, you can imagine aconite is one of our number one shock remedies. A person, remember we said earlier how they are very susceptible to changes in climate, changes in the atmospheric changes, and excessively sensitive with their skin? Well, think about aconite being exposed to a cold wind and then coming down that night with that fever and feeling flushed and very, very fearful that they might die. This is an acute remedy, which perhaps sulfur might be the chronic for the individual who comes down with this type of symptomatology. And sulfur follows it well in pneumonia. Therefore, we know sulfur is a really good lung remedy and in other acute diseases. What about the aggravations for sulfur? They are worst when they are at rest or when they are standing. They are worse for the warmth of the bed. They are worse for washing or bathing. And they are worse for changeable weather. And here, Dr. Allen says the worst for changeable weather, you might bring up in your mind rhus toxicondrin. And we know rhus also is very affected by the weather, especially wet and humid, rainy weather. They could come down with kind of arthritic feelings in their bones and their joints, and even a headache from rainy weather. Then we have, what is it that makes a sulfur person feel more comfortable and better? What ameliorates their symptoms? The answer to that is dry, warm weather. So the folks who say, let's go to Arizona, let's go to some place where it's dry, to the desert, then you might think about sulfur constitution. And they also have lying on the right side. Quite peculiar, wouldn't you say, that when you ask a person, in what position do you sleep at night, they will say, I lie down on my right side. He tells us this is the exact reverse of stanit. Stannum is the element tin. So we have a comparison of sulfur to tin. And that is basically the keynotes for muriatic acid and sulfur. I did not compare it to sulfuric acid. That would be for another day. We have been really discussing this, and so far I would love any kind of comments that you have. I'm going to go ahead and move over to the Materia Medica, the Homeopathic Remedy Guide by Robin Murphy. And you know, on Homeopathy World Community, I think we have one of the most extensive articles on sulfur. It was started by Gina Taylor probably in 2009 about sulfur, because she found it to be a very, besides being a polycrest remedy covering so many different symptoms, she's married to a person who uses the sulfur remedy as a constitution, so she knows a lot about it. So if you do a search, go to Homeopathy World Community and search, put in the Google search box, sulfur you will come up, and I'm doing that right now. You'll come up. It was written in June 28, 2010. We have sulfur personality. And so, and there's another one written about the genius of, oh, sulfur personality is by Dr. Usmani, who's written about over 60 different articles on homeopathy world community. And he was also inspired by Gina Tyler's article on sulfur and how beautiful a piece of writing it was. Okay. Read a little bit about what Dr. Usmani says, because he is an eloquent way of speaking. He says that coming back to, I'm going to just jump into the middle of his article, jumping back to the sulfur toddler, any restriction or chastisement from his elders does not make him reactionary, but pensive and morose. He has a natural tendency to fantasize. In such circumstances, he indulges in this tendency. So we think about another thing that we say about sulfur is they make sandcastles. They make castles in the air. They have a tendency to fantasize a lot. They don't always get stuff done, but they can think about it. The text has it, indulging in fancies while lying in bed with closed eyes, unquote. Indulging in fancies, he may be musing on the unjust chastisement with closed eyes. The parents taking him as fast asleep make him witness what they do when he is asleep. This unusual scene shakes him to the quick. He feels himself robbed of confidence, the sulfur being innately religious and conscientious. He feels nonplussed in the face of this catastrophic knowledge about his parents, the paragon of virtues for him. He has fallen into the painful psychological love-hate morass. His world is shaken. And you just imagine this toddler who loves and idolizes his parents, who's a very religious type of person, and then he begins this rebelliousness. His first feels this phenomena at least shocking and shameless. Then he passes a moral judgment and brands this as sinful action and his parents as wicked. But man is, like all life, a sexual being. Continuous ruminating and fantasizing the scenes gives him an undercurrent, voluptuous titillation. And there we have the itch, do we not? A queer sensation of pleasure betakes him, to which he would never admit consciously. Repetition of visualization of these scenes starts creating a split in his love-hate complex. The sentiment of love starts drifting unconsciously toward his mother, and the hate toward his father. Quite Freudian. This is the sort of Oedipus complex. And from now onward, his fancies start getting a hue of voluptuousness and carnal pleasure, the universe of which is his mother. Sulfur has, as a rule, no amorous fancies, but when these become intensely sexual, there is always a tubercular taint behind the facade of sulfur. When tuberculosis and sulfur combined, lasciviousness is born. Sulfur supplies the fantasies, and tubercular miasm gives it to the myriad colors of sex. Out of all the chronic miasms, the tubercular miasm is the most potently and violently sexual and lustful, full of sexual libido, elan vital, that gives intensely porno lasciviousness, coloring to sulfur reveries and fancies. A child who passes through such psychomoral pangs as above will certainly become, at this tender age, mentally and spiritually precocious. But we don't find sulfur under the remedy precocity, and he's thinking about the mind chapter in the Robin Murphy Materia Medica. Sulfur is precocious, not only under the socio-sexual sense, but he is precocious roundly in all senses. How can a person with an inborn logical, philosophical mind, and we know that sulfurs are very philosophical, they're philosophers, who is bound to become a literary person later in life in the fields of science, religion, philosophy, and literature, be not precocious as a child. I have entered sulfur under the rubric precocity in my copy of Murphy, says Dr. Usmani. He says, P.S., on reading Murphy's chapter on children, I'm happy he has mentioned sulfur under precocity in black letters. Murphy gives 9 remedies under this rubric, while Kent gives only one, and he tells us that that is Mercurius solubus. Quite interesting. Now, Dr. Usmani is talking about the two sulfurs. He says, I believe there are 2 kinds of personalities of sulfur. One, the classical, which consists mostly of unlettered people, such as peasants, laborers, and street urchins. And also the somewhat mentally deranged literati, including freaky poets, artists, and writers. For them, the classical picture is detailed in the books. And as was written a little bit read a little bit earlier in today's show, quote, lean, stoop-shouldered persons who walk and sit stooped, dirty and filthy people with greasy skin and long, straight, matted hair, prone to skin diseases, a child who cannot bear to be washed, emaciated, big-bellied, restless, hot and kicking covers at night, infested with intestinal worms. Just imagine that picture in your mind. The other breed of sulfur, the development of which we have followed above in so much detail, and I skipped the initial part of his talk, so you'll have to go to Homeopathy World Community to read the first number of paragraphs, includes philosophers, scientists, religious magnates, great writers, poets, and artists. They may also have some freaks or unusual traits, but there these freaks do not detract even an iota from their greatness. You know, you think of like the mad professor, the crazy mad professor. Yeah, they might be a sulfur constitution. The philosopher never ceases asking why this and why that and how this and how that, even in settled matters. So is sulfur. His inquisitiveness and investigative mind never ceases doubting. Maybe there are skeptics. His investigation can be linear, but many times it is multidirectional. He may be probing in many disciplines of knowledge at the same time. So you'll find many threads of inquiry abandoned, which can be revisited later on at any time. So you might hear somebody saying, you know, I'm reading about 5 books at the same time, right? Who is that? It could be a sulfur. Sulfur is in black letters for theorizing and making many plans. How many of you out there listening have made many plans, air castles in your mind, and have not carried them out? Maybe that one dose of sulfur, and I'm not telling you to take it, but maybe that one dose of sulfur might set you straight. Dr. Usmani continues to say, if his multidirectional investigation does not grow into fruition in some concrete form of document, a research paper, an article, or a book, such a person is in danger. If the abandoned threads are diverse and deeply indulged into, then there is danger of mental derangement, or at least developing into a freak. Sulfur has such dangers lurking near. So you can see, I'm thinking in my own mind about it. ADHD, somebody's so distracted, so curious about literally everything in their environment, everything that they hear and see and are told, that they go off in so many different directions, they can't pull it all together and make it happen. Everybody has a little of this inside of them, do they not? Being an egotistical and overcritical and censorious does not earn him many friends, even long-endured friendships come to a frustrated end. So you can see the personality here, not easy to get along with. Dr. Usmani says, with the sulfur background of knowledge, its intensity and vastness, it is natural for him to develop a sort of pride or superiority complex, and along with this, a disgust. So think about that. People who say, I'm disgusted with this or that, you might also bring into your mind sulfur. And think about the sulfur person. Aren't they kind of disgusting if they're like filthy and they have all of these skin diseases? Might you not think that they have this element of disgust really as part of their nature? So Dr. Usmani says, this disgust is not for people, but it is for ignorance, for stupidity, and for dogmatism. And when these latter traits embody a person or a group of persons, then it becomes a disgust for people also. So, you know, if you group them up together and all of these people are stupid and dumb and ignorant, man, I guess you might say they have a disgust for that type of people. It is in the text, quoting Dr. Usmani, that sulfur has fanaticism. True. But this trait is found in the classical sulfur. Those people have very limited horizon, and they live and spend their life according to their minuscule mores of culture and religion. But the modern sulfur, whom we are discussing now, is a person of vast and universal horizon. He freely speculates in matters of philosophy and religion. Both of those, philosophy and religion, are in black letters in their rubrics. The modern sulfur can neither be fanatic nor dogmatic, nor a follower of blind rituals. No, religion for him is a matter of study, inquiry, and speculation, not for indulgence. He is accommodating and tolerant of contradiction, like any really intellectual person, but disputative, where a real issue of knowledge is concerned and discussed or misrepresented. Expression of self-importance we find in sulfur since childhood. He has excessive self-esteem based on his feeling that, hey, I'm a great person. You ever hear somebody say that? I'm a great person. Well, think about that touch of sulfur. He finds himself different from his friends. Yeah, I'm really different, he says. Even the teachers find this from his demeanor, and it is because of this that he is usually made the head boy of his class. Wow, they become a leader. An ingrained feeling in him is that he is destined to be a great person in the future. Boy, he's making plans. And whenever he is introduced to a celebrity, especially a divine personality, by his parents or relatives, and he finds that no special notice has been taken of him by that divinity, he finds himself spiritually dismayed and wonders why the eyes of that dignitary could not discern the future luminary in him. This is not a sort of grandiose delusion, but a sort of aspiration, because you don't find a moment when you find a sulfur not wetting himself or chiseling his personality. This is also because of his feeling of that he is a great person, that you will never find him oblivious of any insult meted out to him. When he was a little child at the hands of his teacher or his parents, so what? He still thought he was a great person. The wound of that insult is always smarting, and remember the burning, smarting sensations that sulfur have. Sulfur is an important remedy under this rubric. Think about it. Humiliation, and humiliation with indignation. And we have for that comparisons, Ignatia and Staphylos agria. Interestingly, Dr. Usmani did not include comparison to Lycopodium, which I would say would be very, very high in humiliation, but maybe not with indignation. The indignation is, for Staphylos agria, quite suppressed. Humiliation with mortification is sulfur. So that mortification, that shock, we think about as sulfur. And I also think about, although it is not mentioned in Dr. Usmani's article here, I also think about anacardium having humiliation with mortification. This sub-rubric, I think, should be added to the repertory, so he's adding it himself. In the rubrics, impatience and hurry, sulfur stands in black letters. Delay in the accomplishment of things is near to his heart, and it cannot be tolerated. He is at the tenterhook of impatience. If the expected thing is not accomplished in the expected time, this will rob him of his sleep and mental calm. For, quote, sleepless from activity of mind or persistent or tormenting thoughts, unquote, sulfur is given in bold and black letters. And I want to thank you so, so much, Dr. Usmani, for this marvelous article. And I have on there, if you do find this article, we have also the link to Gina Tyler's article, and I've got that link here. It's probably, I can't tell you if I, it's how many pages long. If I go to the bottom here, 5 pages of writing on Homeopathy World Community, where there's a lot of comments and a lot of further explanation. I'd like to read for you Dr. Superio Malik, contributed in 2009. If you do, there's a special word for the initial letters. Like if you take your name, the initial letters of your name, then you write out a poem from it or a statement on each letter. He has done this. He says, S is for stubborn mentally. U is unusually hot. L is for lack of cleanliness. P is profuse perspiration with foul odor. H is for hurried, Hippocratic, and hypersensitive. U is for unconventional, and R is for ragged philosopher. I wonder if you would like to do that for yourself, maybe for some other remedies or for sulfur, and find out how would you, what characteristic or keynote would you put for S-U-L-P-H P-H-U-R. And I want to make a note that some people do misspell S-U and they put an L sulfur with an F or an E-R, but the spelling is S-U-L-P-H-U-R. And this has been a lot of fun. I have been speaking for an hour and a half today about muriatic acid and sulfur. I hope it has been educational and a wonderful learning experience. And you might download this talk today to put on your iTunes, your cell phone, wherever you are. You can listen to it over and over again. I'm sure that there's so many little tidbits in here that you can pick up and refresh your memory to keep for whenever it's going to come up in your practice or you're going to notice it. We have talked quite a bit about ulcers and skin, and it could also have helpfulness with vaccinations. The comparison with the many nosodes that we have of disease materia. Here we have here 1 through 44. On Gina's page, the essence of sulfur types. I guess I could read this out for you. This is 1 through 44. Reading these quickly. Sulfur is an extremely hot-blooded person, warm hands and feet, and always kicks off the blanket. Now, make a note, she didn't say about the cold feet, but we did learn it, did we not? Number 2, nervous, lean, eccentric looking. Number 3, you can spot a sulfur in a crowd due to his unruly long hair and outgoing selection of clothing, sometimes wearing the same clothes week after week. Quite interesting, huh? They just wear those. They have that favorite piece of clothing. It's their good luck charm, their good luck scarf or shirt or belt that they're not going to go without it, and they're just going to wear it every single day. Number four, sits in the chair with his body, his entire body involved. I wonder what she means by that. Number five, he paces the floor and cannot stand still in one spot. Why would that be? Because he's impatient, he's hurried, and he's uncomfortable standing. Number six, cannot wear wool clothes and gets super, super itchy. Right, because we know that the skin is very, very sensitive and very itchy, and that wool can produce that sensation. Number seven, health complaints are always relapsing. Okay, what did we learn? Always relapsing. And number eight, noon and midnight are the worst aggravations for sulfurs. Let's set that into our memory. Noon and midnight, worst aggravation. Number nine, it has to be his idea, not someone else's. So if you're a woman, be smart and just let him think it's his idea, even though you really gave it to him. Number 10, reads a lot of books and retains everything. So here you're going to look at the bookworm, somebody who's got stacks and stacks of books piled up all around. Number 11, he can teach a class better than the instructor. I've heard that one before. Number 12, a sulfur scholar does not worry about his physical appearance. Just take me as I am. Number 13, messy house does not matter to sulfur. Totally and completely indifferent to the mess. So if you're out there, you know, you could be a sulfur woman as well as a sulfur male. You know, if you're a cleanly person and you hook up with a sulfur, you're going to have a really rough time together trying to feel comfortable in the space. You might have to give that person their own messy room and let the rest of the house be clean. So that sulfur person is not going to mess it up. Number 14, offensive body odors. And there's that sulfur element. Number 15, intolerance of artificial heaters indoors, and that makes them stuffy. Remember venous congestion. Number 16, chronic skin eruptions, eczema, dry itchy psoriasis, boils, and acne. Good teenage remedy. Number 17, lots of anxiety, dislike of criticism, suppression, and being scorned. Number 18, embarrassing and is extremely humiliating, or is extremely humiliating. So if they're embarrassed, hey, mom and dad, if you've got a sulfur child, take them away into a private place to speak to them about whatever's going on, and don't humiliate them in front of their friends. Number 19, much struggling for ego and honor. 20, sulfur idealists are usually dogmatic and cannot be swayed. Boy, when they're set in their ways, you're going to have a hard time to convince them otherwise. But Dr. Usmani also said that they can be the type of person who are going to be open to all kinds of ideas. Very creative minds. Investigative. Number 21, absent-minded professor, neglecting practical aspects of their lives. Number 22, sulfurs make excellent teachers. Number 23, sulfurs want to do things whenever they want to do it, not when they're told. And I want to tell you, I mentioned earlier about the opossum proving. It had the exact same thing. They did not want to be told what to do. They wanted to do it whenever they wanted to. Number 24, known for drinking large amounts of fill-in-the-blank, alcohol. That's why it's good for alcoholics. Number 25, charming to the opposite sex. Many sulfurs are womanizers. Number 26, having many partners. Openly flirting with women, but hopelessly dependent on their wives, emotionally and practically. And she is one of those sulfur wives, so that's why she said it. Number 27, sulfurs are great in promoting themselves. So you might want to have a sulfur around to help promote you. Well, maybe they just promote themselves. Number 28, lots of self-confidence. They're gifted and they're enterprising. Number 29, preferring self-employment. Likes his independence and likes his freedom. Maybe they're hard we know that they are leaders and they could probably be at the top of the scale, the top of the pyramid, but how are they if they are being employed and they don't like being told what to do? Number 30, has knowledge of a broad range of subjects and is highly intellectual. Number 31, most have no formal education on and are self-taught. They're born an intellectual genius. Wow. Number 32, sulfurs like an audience. Yes, because we know sulfurs can get up there and do a monologue and you can't keep them quiet. Number 33, sulfurs do not care about being socially acceptable. Again, take me as I am, and that's the way, just love me or leave me, I guess. Number 34, they relate to all walks of life, young and old. Number 35, individualist and independent. Number 36, childish persona. Number 37, lots of self-confidence, boasting about his achievements. She already said that they do like to promote themselves. Number 38, when it comes to a goal or passion, sulfur dives into it 1,000%, not 100%, 1,000%. Whether it is negative obsession or work-related project, they are passionate, goal-oriented people. In the same respect that I said that they can get easily distracted because they got their hands in so many different pots at the same time and so many different books and so many different ideas and passions, they can also, whether it is a negative obsession or work-related project, they dive into it 1,000%. Number 39, protective of his family. The wife is queen in his eyes. That sounds nice, just so long as they pick up their socks and keep their room clean. Number 40, sulfur feels like a child of the universe. Number 41, often unbearable to live with, cynical, and feeling sorry for themselves, causing insecurities. Isn't that interesting, the dichotomy, the feeling insecurities when they're so egotistical and so much pride in themselves and they can do anything and they're the best and they don't like stupidity, they don't like ignorance, and yet they can have all of these insecurities. Number 42, becoming aloof, guarded, and with self-doubt. That probably is an outcropping of the insecurities. Number 43, they worry about their future. And last, number 44, they revel in argument or anecdote. And I think about Lycopodium also being argumentative and critical. This has been a very long talk today, all about sulfur. Remember, these talks are simply educational. They are simply informative, creating waves of awareness, opening your eyes to something new, learning together, and they are not as any kind of medical advice. Go to your own homeopath, your own healthcare provider. If you have a health concern, please see somebody who is a professional. You can see how complicated these remedies can be. You can certainly learn about the rubrics and learn about the keynotes, and they can come in a pinch when you're in an emergency situation, while you're running to the doctor or getting an ambulance or whatever, getting a Band-Aid from mama. But really, these are for your own enlightenment. I want to thank you for listening to that. And there have been a bunch of different things that I've been reading along the internet recently. One is about a study saying that the leafy greens have food poisoning in them, a source of food poisoning. The government says that leafy greens like lettuce and spinach are leading causes or sources of food poisoning. And, you know, we do want you to be Popeye. We do want you to eat your spinach. It's really good, unless you have a tendency to gout, because the uric acid in the spinach is going to give you your gout. But we need the chlorophyll. We need the greens. It's the best thing that we can do for our bodies. And it's very difficult for the health officials to say to us, eat your vegetables, but be careful, because your lettuce and your spinach are going to be the sources for food poisoning. Most meals are safe, said Dr. Patricia Griffin, government researcher and one of the study's authors, who said that the findings shouldn't discourage people from eating produce. Experts repeatedly often heard advice, be sure to wash your food before you eat it and cook them thoroughly. What do the raw foodies do? They're not going to cook anything. They're going to eat it. So spray it with some grapeseed oil, grapeseed extract. Rinse it and put it into a bowl with water. Make sure you get all the sand off of whatever you've got there, of your leafy greens, and rinse them thoroughly. While more people may have gotten sick from plants, more people died from contaminated poultry. The study also found that, and the results were released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Roughly 1 in 6 Americans, or 48 million people, get sick from food poisoning. Just think about that. 1 in 6 people. You're in a room and there's 6 people there. One of you have had food poisoning this year. That includes 128,000 hospitalizations and 3,000 deaths, according to the CDC. The new report is most comprehensive it has ever done on the sources of food poisoning, covering the years between 1998 and 2008. And we know between the year of 2008 and 2013, we've had a lot of outbreaks of food poisoning, E. coli and other such things. It reflects the agency's growing sophistication at monitoring disease and illness and finding the source. What jumped out at the researchers was the role that fruits and vegetables played in food poisoning. Basically, you know, it's from poor handling of food. The people who are in the fields who are not washing properly, or maybe they don't even have the equipment to wash properly, but if they're not washing properly, then they're going to transfer whatever's on their hands to their food, especially if they're out there collecting it or picking it or packing it. 1 in 5 illnesses was linked to the leafy green vegetables, more than any other type of food, and nearly half of all food poisonings were attributed in general when the illness from fruits and vegetables were added. There was a controversy from Taco Bell that was airing a TV ad for its variety of 12-pack of tacos with a voiceover saying that bringing a vegetable tray to a football party is like punting on 4th and 1. It said that people secretly hate guests who bring vegetables to parties. That's quite interesting, is it not? People don't like guests who bring vegetables to parties. Is this because of a fear of food poisoning, or is it because they don't like to eat their veggies? I don't know what the answer to that one is. And it said that they were going to, Taco Bell was going to remove their commercial from airing. So the CDC would like to put more energy, more inspectors into inspection of fruit and vegetables. That there was going to be a new rule for produce safety that would set new hygiene standards for farm workers and for trying to reduce contact with animal waste and dirty water. Yeah, that's another way. I mean, if you're taking effluent from the animals and you're using these big sprayers, the hoses and the conduits, taking dirty water and spraying the fields with wastewater, you're sure to be covering. It's not just the handlers. It's the way the foods are being produced, because water is so precious that they want to use gray water, the reuse of water. So there is a lot to be involved in keeping our foods clean and safe, edible, and without any kind of viruses or bacteria that might be harmful. That's why they always tell you to cook your foods thoroughly. The largest proportion of foodborne illness deaths, 1 in 5, are due to poultry. So definitely cook your chicken, cook your, I don't know who eats duck today, your quail, any kind of poultry, cook it thoroughly. And also turkey, they said turkey meat. So probably during Thanksgiving, partially cooked or partially heated food, if you have it sitting out, you want to make sure it is properly prepared. Okay, and that is the story about food poisoning today and the leafy greens. You can see why when you're speaking a long time, you need to take a drink of water. And I want to make one more mention here. The FDA ignores instructions from Congress. Hey, all you listeners out there, I'm so thrilled and happy that I'm not talking into thin air. If you want to send me a comment, let me know that you're listening. Any kind of contribution to the show would be really, really welcome. This is the FDA again ignores instructions from Congress. It turns a blind eye to allergic reactions from Big Pharma's favorite foods, Action Alert. This is coming off of the Alliance for Natural Health. In 2004, Congress passed the Food Allergen Labeling and Consumer Protection Act, FALCPA, which required that food labels clearly state when any of the 8 major food allergens are present in the product. The 8 foods or food groups are milk, eggs, fish, such as bass, flounder, and cod, crustacean shellfish, such as crabs, lobster, and shrimp, tree nuts, like almonds. I never think about almonds as being allergic. In fact, I think about almonds as being almond milk is the like most safe for children to drink who are allergic to regular cow's milk. But it's saying that tree nuts, including almonds, pecans, and walnuts, and wheat is today, you know, people are really gluten intolerant. And then peanuts, which is not a true nut, but it's a legume, like a bean or a pea, is in the same family as peas and lentils. Many people, especially children today, have become allergic to peanuts, possibly because peanut oil might be used in the vaccines. And so you're creating a hypersensitive immune system to that ingredient. And soybeans. So I just listed the 8 top allergens that people have today. Therefore, what today is produced that doesn't have soy in it? Very little. So you have to read your labels. And an ingredient that contains a protein derived from one of these foods. So like you think casein. Casein is a derivation from milk, these dairy products. So you have to be careful and learn all of the other derivations that are coming from these main 8 food groups. These main 8 food groups account for 90% of the most obvious allergic reactions to food. They produce classic immediate allergen responses, like closing of the throat, sneezing, and an asthma attack or hives. These are all caused by the reaction of the antibody called immunoglobulin E, IgE. The medical establishment is not taking into account the internal and often silent IgG or IgA immune responses like those to gluten, which can create inflammatory or intestinal permeability, not to mention IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. It's not just a matter of discomfort. Our immune system resides in our gut. When the small intestine is damaged, our entire immune system is vulnerable. So I want to say that we're going to be talking quite a bit more in future shows about the connection between caring for our gut our intestines, our digestion, our stomach, because really our immune system, our health, resides in the ability for us to absorb the proper nutrients and to eliminate what is excess in our body. And if we're causing inflammatory disease in our gut, we are certainly going to have problems in our health. There's a lot more to this particular article, but the problem is that the government is not paying close enough attention. The FDA ignores the instructions from Congress about labeling. And you think about that, we are not giving full disclosure about what is in our foods, especially genetically modified organisms, GMO. We are not getting full disclosure about GMO, and these foods are not being labeled. Therefore, as a counter reaction, many of the food producers who produce GMO-free foods are definitively putting that onto their label so that you can see when you pick up the package that it does not have. It's kind of counterintuitive. It's reverse. It's very similar to what is happening in our world today, like on Facebook or any other thing. You have to opt out instead of opt in, which means that the person, you out there, the public, have to be educated, enlightened, and aware of what's happening in your environment, the controls that are being placed on you, the restrictions that are being placed on you, so that you can take a consolidated, legal, lawful action and retain your rights for free and healthy, natural living. And tomorrow we're going to be talking with Alan Phillips about vaccines and your rights. So we have only a few minutes left. Just a note that there's a beautiful article in Mothering Magazine about elderberries for cold and flu prevention. This is tried and true. Sambucus, which was, maybe 10 years or more ago, huge studies about Sambucus in Israel as a syrup to eliminate, prevent the symptoms of influenza. Elderberries, a beautiful berry in our mountains here in North Carolina and in other places. They work by mediating the different cytokines, a group of proteins, peptides, and glycoproteins that are secreted by specific cells of the immune system. Those cytokine storm you've heard is when they get acting up, you're going to have the trigger to the inflammatory response in the body. And so what happens is this: the Sambucus might have an effect on calming these kinds of inflammatory responses of the body. Also, I would recommend lots of fluids. Drink water, drink pure water. I'm going to be having available on my website, it's going to be Purity Water, P-U-R-I-T-I-I. They are going to be a filter water bottle that you can take any water from your tap, from the stream, from an ocean, from a lake, anywhere, no matter where you are in any country, whether it is contaminated with Giardia or amoeba or anything, runoff, it will clean at 99.99%, and you will be able to drink water where you might not have been, and you'll feel a little bit better about that. And we have another story, link between fetal exposure to PVC, plastic chemical, and obesity in offspring. Again, these PVCs, like plastic pipes, be careful about what's in your home, things that are made from PVC, vinyl, plastic flooring, plastic. You think about, I think some of these PVCs might even be in our hoses that we use to water our lawns. It's all over in the environment and has infiltrated into our drinking water. And so there is a link now to obesity. if I just give you a little heads up on Homeopathy World Community, next Monday at 11 a.m., we're going to have Stephen Blake. He is an animal whisperer, a wonderful doctor of veterinary medicine. He's going to tell us how to keep our pets healthy. I have on the website, HWC, Homeopathy World Community, a link to the tongue that does not lie. A lot of people will use the expression of the tongue that is a observation, a view of our inner self right there in our mouth, and that can be used for helping to determine what remedy to give in a certain case, whether the tongue is red or furred or coated or cracked. Whether there are geographic tongue or a line down the middle, whether the edges are different. You know, there's different ways that both the Chinese medicine and homeopaths can use that information. We have Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. That is a computer program for healthcare providers, nurses, doctors, chiropractors, acupuncturists, homeopathic students, and homeopaths. This is the one that I use. I love it. You can read your Materia Medica in there. You can put together a group of rubrics and come up with an analysis for the top remedies. We have Dr. Adil will be back with us next Wednesday at 10:30. I'm looking forward to speaking with him. Kavitha Kukunor is an inspirational author, and she's written a motivational book. There's a link to that on the front page. And there's also redox signaling molecules. It's ASEA, ASEA water. That is something brand new. It is not homeopathic. It is more scientifically based. It is completely patented process. It's a kosher product. It's basically NaCl. It is salt water that has stabilized these redox signaling molecules that help to repair the cells. And you only take a capful of that one morning, each morning and evening, and you might see some helpful effects from that particular product. I think that's about it today, and we're going to put our special exit music on. And I want to thank everyone so wholeheartedly for listening, sending waves of awareness. Get on to Homeopathy World Community on Facebook, say hello, retweet on Twitter. I'm looking forward to meeting more of you out there. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and special guests. We encourage you to follow our show, favorite the show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with your friends on Facebook and Twitter. Send in your comments and questions. See you the next time. Homeopathy.